Hi, welcome to James Miller Lifeology, where you learn to simplify and transform your spirit, mind, and body. My name is James Miller. I'm a licensed psychotherapist and a composer. Thank you so much for joining me today in this podcast. Let's get started. Today's episode is brought to you by Audible.com. Get your free audiobook and a free 30-day trial at www.audibletrial.com/James Miller Lifeology. I have a great show for you today. I'll be teaching you the importance of expressing your emotions. I'll also be interviewing David Ingerson, who shares his heart-wrenching story of how he and his family endured the loss of their infant son. You all know me as a psychotherapist, but many of you do not know me as a composer. My first album, Consolation, was written specifically for people who are experiencing grief and loss. I like to think of this album like a book. Each original composition is written like a chapter in a book. And just like in any story, it goes from the loss that one experiences and eventually helps people find the hope for their future. You may purchase this album on iTunes or through any other digital music store. Be sure to download the digital booklet that comes along with it. The name of the album is Consolation, and my stage name is James S. Miller. The name of the piece you are currently hearing is entitled Temptation. I can tell by that look, friend, that you need to talk. So come take my hand and let's go for a walk. See, I'm not like the others. I won't shy away because I want to hear what you've got to say. Your child has died and you need to be heard, but they don't want to hear a single word. They tell you your child's with God, so be strong. They say all the right things that somehow seem wrong. They're just hurting for you and trying to say they'd give anything to help take your pain away. But you're struggling with feelings they can't understand, so forgive them for not offering a helping hand. I'll walk in your shoes for more than a mile. I'll wait while you cry and be glad if you smile. I won't criticize you or judge you or scorn. I'll just stay and listen till your night turns to morn. Yes, the journey is hard and unbearably long, and I know that you think that you're not quite that strong. So just take my hand, because I've got time to spare. And I know how it hurts, friend, for I have been there. See, I owe a debt you can help me repay, for not so long ago I was helped the same way, as I stumbled and fell through a world so unreal. So believe when I say that I know how you feel. I don't look for praise or financial gain, and I'm sure not that kind who gets joy out of pain. I'm just a strong shoulder who will be here till the end. I'll be your compassionate friend. Your Compassionate Friend by Stephen L. Channing. The importance of expressing your emotions. One of the amazing things about being a human is to be able to experience all sorts of emotions. Every creature has a defense mechanism, and many of us don't realize that expressing our emotions is actually a version of a defense mechanism. For whatever reason, when we grow up, we're told that we shouldn't cry, or we shouldn't feel that way, or we shouldn't do this, or we shouldn't do that. And sure, it makes sense why some parents would say that to their children, but unfortunately, we as humans internalize that our emotions that we're experiencing are not healthy for us, or that we shouldn't do that, or we are not a man if we cry. In today's lesson, I wanted to focus on the benefits of expressing emotions. One thing I typically do when I work with children is I explain how our emotions should be within a hula hoop. So I take a little hula hoop and I stand inside of it and I say, all of my emotions are healthy, but anything that goes outside of the diameter of this hula hoop, it's not okay. So I really want us to understand today that every emotion we feel is healthy for us. We've been given a wonderful spectrum of all types of emotions. The problem is that many people don't realize the benefits of expressing emotions as well as how to express it appropriately. Every emotion we experience is for a specific purpose. The difference is what we do with those emotions and how we express them will determine if they're considered healthy or not. So one of the things as you hear this is think of a hula hoop. Anything outside of that hula hoop circle is going to affect the world around you. But remember, emotions are for you. They're for you specifically to deal with anything that you're going through. From enjoying something, to grieving something, to protecting yourself with anger. All of that is specifically designed to help you live a successful life. So when we tell ourselves that we can't feel something or we shouldn't feel something, we're pretty much just limiting our ability to be a human. What you do with your emotions will determine how healthy you are. Did you realize that your body does the same exact thing, for the most part, when it comes to laughing and crying? Think about it. You are laughing so hard that all of a sudden you find yourself crying. Or you're crying so hard that all of a sudden you start to laugh. Like I've taught you before, the perception we have about a situation determines what we feel. What we feel determines what our body does. So depending on the thoughts you have about the situation will determine if you laugh or cry. If you have sad thoughts, you cry. If you have happy thoughts, you laugh. But did you realize that it's so important to do those things? Many people don't realize that there are so many toxins in our body when we go through a stressful situation. There's what's called cortisol. Cortisol is a stress hormone. And when there's too much of that stress hormone, it can cause a lot of negative health problems. And one of the great reasons about crying is when you have a good cry, I'm sure we've all said that before, I feel so much better after crying. When we cry those deep sobs and have those fat tears that fall down our face, did you know that those are actually full of toxins? Those are full of all the stress hormones. And when you actually cry, it releases all of that. So that's why people say, I feel so much better after I cried, is because you're literally purging yourself from everything you're experiencing. And switching gears here for laughter, did you realize that the more laughter you have in your life, it actually causes your body to create what's called natural killer cells? And these natural killer cells, what they do is any toxins in your body or any free radicals in your bloodstream, when you laugh more, it actually produces more of those, which then combats any of those negative cells, which then helps a person live longer, which has them become more healthy. So that's why it's so important for us to be able to feel these emotions. So you have the spectrum of sadness, of pain and desolation, and you express it through tears. And then you have the joy of your life and everything you're experiencing, and that is going to cause you to produce these additional cells. So when we look at the full spectrum of that, we can see that there are so many health benefits for every emotion we experience. One thing I always tell my clients to do is when we can create some type of physical movement and we build that into our day, so some type of exercise, when we can build that into our day, what we're doing is we're causing our body to sweat, we're causing our body to move, we're causing our heart rate to increase a little bit. And when we do all this, that's a way to purge the emotions that are building up in our body, because once we release them, then it's not going to affect us so much. So one of the proactive stances I always have is build some form of physical movement into your life every day, because that is going to help you should you be overwhelmed with all these other emotions. Because remember, whatever we think determines what we feel, determines what we do. And in the doing part of things, if we don't allow ourselves to feel, it's going to come out in a negative way. That's why people pace. That's why people shout. That's why people scream, is because they haven't realized that the proactive stance of how they can purge themselves from any of these emotions is through physical movement. And then the more intense the emotion is, the more we have to come up with different ways. And that's why crying is important. That's why physical exertion is important. That's why laughing is important. Whatever those emotions are. Sometimes I have people say, well, James, I only feel this one emotion, or it doesn't make sense that I have these combination of emotions. Well, that's one of the wonderful things about being a human, is the complexity of our emotions are so great that we can feel multiple emotions at once. And so it doesn't have to be black and white. I'm happy or I'm sad. For example, if you're at a funeral and you're really sad, and all of a sudden you have this memory of the person and you just start to laugh because it's a great memory, but you're still sad. So I really want to encourage you that regardless of what emotions you're experiencing, you're going to feel many layers of those emotions, and that's okay. Whatever emotion is the greatest for you in that moment that you're aware of, deal with that particular emotion. One of the biggest myths, like I said earlier, is when we're told men don't cry. I really don't know how that came about, but when you think about it, if you want to be the epitome of a man, that's to demonstrate a full sense of healthiness. And a full sense of healthiness is the ability to express certain emotions, because when you express the emotions and you cry, you're going to be healthier than the people who don't. And when you don't, it doesn't afford you the ability to then get to the level of happiness, of joy, of laughter, which then causes these additional non-killer cells to be formed, which then allows you to be healthier, so then you're there for your family. So I would really encourage you today, whatever emotions you're experiencing today, they are incredibly healthy for you. The difference is we shouldn't use those emotions to inflict any type of discomfort on anybody else. Obviously, we're not going to yell at someone. We're not going to attack someone. We're not going to do anything that could be harmful to them or ourselves, but we're going to express it. And the good thing is you get to determine what is a healthy expression for yourself. I give you permission to cry. I give you permission to laugh. Because once you have this awareness, you're going to be able to experience all the emotions and understand the benefits of these emotions. And if you don't, you're actually limiting yourself and causing yourself physical distress. You're not going to be healthy, and it's going to cause you to live a limited life. And now, a quick word from my sponsor. Audible.com is offering you, my listener, a free audiobook and a free 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/JamesMillerLifeology. Many of you don't know this about me, but I'm an avid reader, so this is a no-brainer for me to go ahead and download any audiobook I'd like to read, specifically if I'm walking my dog, at the gym, or just even driving. So for you to get your free audiobook, go to audibletrial.com/JamesMillerLifeology. They have over 180,000 books for you to choose from, so I'm pretty confident you'll find the one you're looking for. So check it out today. David Ingerson is an award-winning author and father who shares his incredible, inspirational story of hope with us today. Welcome to my show, David.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Well, wonderful. I was able to read some of your bio on your website, and the story that I read, it just moved me to tears to hear all that's happened in your family's life. Would you like to share that with my listeners today?
You bet. I'd be very happy to. The big picture, I'll tell you, is really in the middle of my 24-year Air Force career as an Air Force officer. We were in Okinawa, Japan, having three small children. We were very excited to be having a fourth child. Mm-hmm. But when the child was born, oh my, we were in for a big surprise. Because within an hour or so of birth, the child was unexpectedly diagnosed with a number of life-threatening congenital anomalies, none of which were observed or diagnosed in the womb, the most serious of which was a seriously malformed heart. In fact, the heart defect effectively gives the child a one-half functioning heart. It's something called hypoplastic left heart syndrome, HLHS. Patients with parents out there will immediately hear that, and their ears will perk up because it's very rare. They believe one in 2,500 or more, something like that. This child, the doctors really didn't think would live. Of course, as a pilot, typical type A personality, man, I paid no attention. I was oblivious to their fears.
Yeah, of course.
I just was ready and willing to charge on and do what we needed to do to take care of the child. Ultimately, he endured 10 major surgeries, five of which were open heart.
Oh, my
he
gosh.
He did have open heart surgery at 6 days of age.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, the poor little guy. Oh, my
gosh.
I'm
telling you, he was a real trooper. He went through a lot. The linchpin, though, James, was at 16 months of age, following and in conjunction with his third open heart surgery, the child was infected with HIV.
Oh, gosh.
The effect of that is that we anticipated the eventuality of a necessity of a heart transplant. Mm-hmm. But we're at cross purposes when we're HIV positive and we need a heart transplant because the immune system is decimated, and his was, with the HIV infection.
Oh, of course.
So we're giving him these high-powered medications to try and elevate, enrich his immune system. However, to receive this foreign heart, you must suppress the immune system.
Mm.
It doesn't work.
So it's a catch-22 then?
Yes. I use the word where it cross purposes.
Mm-hmm.
It took that off the table. And the realization that that option was taken off the table to his parents, to his mother and I, made us feel as though there was a death sentence announced over the child, and that was very difficult to take. So in the story, in the book, I share my, not just what's happening from a journal, actually, but I'm sharing my feelings, my reactions, my thoughts, my anger, my rage, my confusion, my bewilderment, my loneliness.
Mm.
You would be amazed at the lonely feeling a husband, a man, a father has as he's going through these sort of things, because you've been told your whole life, got the right stuff, you're going to do great, and you're doing great things, and suddenly you can't do anything.
Yeah. Well, that sense of helplessness and hopelessness,
yes.
I can't even
yes,
imagine indeed. How overwhelming that was for you, David.
You bet. Overwhelming.
Obviously, so when you had the news that you had another child that was on board, I'm sure that excitement and that and the joy of that news as the pregnancy continued, I'm sure that was very overwhelming. And then jumping back, when you got this news, as soon as he was born, when you got this news, how did you and your wife or your family, how did you rally around that? How did you were you able to hear that news, and just like you said, with that type A personality, to find a hope or to find it to be problem solving in some way?
It's a very good area to consider, because in the early part of the book, I describe in much detail what I was experiencing, and much of it was absolute ignorance.
Mm.
I was not very medically astute. My wife, who is and was a nurse, is much more medically astute, and she was much quicker to pick up on the cues that the child's not going to live. I was oblivious to them.
Of course.
But we have to understand, I was a military officer, a pilot, living in Okinawa, Japan, and I was going to be going forth to the Philippines on a 10-day mission in about a week, and I had this, that happening. Giving birth to the child was very important, but it's something you do. And then, okay, it's time to press on and get back to work.
Yeah.
Well, work was interrupted. Life was interrupted. And when we flew from Okinawa, Japan, within about less than 24, barely more than 12 hours, 18 hours after the child's birth, leaving the other small children, 6, 4, and 2 years old, on the island of Okinawa, under the care of a woman we barely knew.
Oh, we had met
on the island in the couple of years we'd been there. Silently, in her postpartum depression and confusion, my wife never told me this until years later. She didn't want to go. She didn't want to leave the other children.
Mm.
I never gave it a second thought. I knew I had to go with the child who needed me, so I went.
Yeah.
So the confusion, the conflicting emotions were so powerful, but I will tell you this. The people that knew us and loved us in our church there in Okinawa, they rallied around us and took care of the other three children. After 26 days, both my wife and I returned separately and overlapped about 9 days back to Okinawa after eventually she had the baby under the care of her mother and in Michigan there. And we went back for this just that short for her 9 days, for me about 6 weeks. At any rate, people came over that we barely knew with mops and brooms in hand, showed up at our front door to clean our military family housing because there are strict standards of you have to keep these places clean when you move out. They didn't care that we had life-stirring situations. They had regulations. We had to clean our place. So friends showed up without being asked.
Oh, that's wonderful, David.
One thing I find, James, people often will say to me, well, when a friend is grieving deeply, the death of a family member or some other deep grieving situation, a child born suddenly with all these defects, unexpected, what can I do to help? All I could tell them is, if you need something, call me. And you know, when you say that, it feels rather flippant and insincere. You may be sincere, but the person who's stressed, they don't know what to ask for. So don't worry about it. Don't worry about stumbling over yourself. Pick up your mop and broom, drive to the house and say, I'm here to clean.
And do something. Sure.
You bet.
Yeah. So with Caleb, that's your son's name, of course. For how long did he live?
He was 3 and a half when he died. The last 6 months of the child's life, he had just had his 5th open heart surgery. And this procedure, they actually were very fearful. The cardiology, cardiothoracic surgery folks warned us, he may not make it through this procedure, but he needs it. Well, we went forward with intrepidation and yet braveness. We knew he needed it. So he came through with flying colors. Within 24 hours, he was on the Massey Ferguson tractor with his grandfather riding it in the field.
Wow.
And his blood oxygen saturations that hovered around 70, 75% on a good day. And the medical people listening to this will cringe and will say, that's very, very dangerous. But for this child, 70 to 75% blood oxygen saturation, normal is 98 to 100%, of course. Mm-hmm. But for this child, 70 to 75% is a pretty good number. Well, it ranged up in the 80s, his last 6 months of life, until one day, the child in my arms at a picnic, he said, Daddy, I want to go swing. He was developmentally right on par with his age group, speech, development-wise, what have you. And I said, yes, we'll go swing in just a minute. We were talking to someone. He suddenly threw his head back down to my knees. As I picked his head up from my knees, I looked at his eyes, half-glazed and ashen gray, and his face already pale. He was gone.
Oh, my gosh. I can't even imagine what that must feel like for you.
You know, the shock that I experienced so many times from the time of his birth, and then shock after shock when he was infected with HIV due to contaminated blood transfusion. We may not have spoken about that yet this morning, but that was a great decimating shock, the shock of his death. It's surreal. You can't believe that what's actually happening around you is happening because it this doesn't happen. This is in the movies. This is not real life. This can't be. And you feel like you're floating, not in a good way. You feel like you're running in sand on the beach. You're going nowhere. You feel like you're trying to talk and move. You're in another dimension. You can't touch the people around you. I think, James, I think I experienced about 18 months of basic numbness.
I'm sure.
I began to look at that numbness after the fact as a great gift. In fact, I have a vivid experience where I've written about it in my journal, then I put it in the book, where I flew Colin Powell when he was Secretary of State around the world on a 21-day trip.
Oh, that's neat.
Just part of my job, just doing my job. I landed back at Andrews Air Force Base in Washington, D.C. We shut down the engines, the party, as we refer to the secretary and his other attendants and folks. Mm-hmm. The party depart the airplane. As the pilot in command for that last leg back to Andrews, that last flight, I walked down the aircraft steps, and I saluted, and I watched the motorcade speed away. I turned to my right and looked up at this awesome baby blue and white painted airplane, the same paint scheme as Air Force One. I looked at that bird, and as it glistened in the sky, I woke up. Mm. I had the most overwhelming sensation that just like that plane had been on autopilot for much of those 21 days driving around, flying around the world. I was on autopilot for the past year and a half.
Wow.
Going through the motions and hardly aware. One funny thing, James, is that memorizing and using your acute mind and memory is something we use very important in aviation and flying and mm-hmm. quizzing each other. And one thing I experienced during those days, I had a very difficult time concentrating, not so much, but memorizing. It was as though my ability to do what I'd done my entire life was just hindered.
And sure.
After that experience of waking up, suddenly I could think clearly. Suddenly I could memorize as I had previously more easily. Suddenly I was regaining mental faculties that I didn't even really know they had been suppressed.
Of course.
At that time. But I believe it's a protection to keep me from just losing my mind.
Yes.
Over the years, I've become thankful, and I've been able to encourage others to be thankful. In fact, when you're going through grieving the death of a loved one, grieving the death of a career, lamenting the loss of your health, the various things that so many of us face throughout life, we need to be honest with our difficult emotions so that we're not controlled by them. And yeah. We can choose to behave in a way that's healthy and right and proper. But if we don't admit these difficult emotions, I find we're more willing to let ourselves just sort of throw in the towel, so to speak, and say, well, and begin to engage in destructive behaviors. And the whole list of self-destructive behaviors is long, and we all know what those things are.
Sure.
We need to avoid them. And I believe being honest with our difficult emotions, being honest with our friends, the ones who want to show up with mop and broom, but they're a little bit afraid, admit you need help and say, hey, I don't know what I need. You don't know what you want to do to help me, but why don't you just come over? Just be with me. Just sit with me.
When you looked up and you saw that painting of that airplane, why do you think it was that particular moment where you woke up?
I don't exactly know, James, but I think in part it was time. Mm-hmm. It had been about a year and a half. That's enough time. Right. Now, I can't tell you how much time it's going to be for you. I didn't even know how much time it was going to be for me. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't mean that snap, you turn on the light switch and everything's over. The darkness of the soul you've experienced, the deep lamentation and despairing. I even call it a deliciousness of despair. That's a term I'm coining in my second book that's due out this year. And that deliciousness of despair is like taking a bite of that dark chocolate, the stuff that almost begins to sting mm-hmm. in your mouth, but it's also powerfully sweet. Well, eventually you reach a point, and I think I was there, where you might get addicted to that deliciousness of despair. You just decide that I'm in this little cocoon.
Well, it's all you know.
It's all you know, but you begin to say, I'm lonely, but I feel safe in my loneliness here. Mm-hmm. I'm avoiding people. Somebody asked me, hey, it's a great day. You're having a good day? And I'm thinking, no, I don't even know what a good day feels like. Yeah. Oh, but I don't say that because I'm, you know, I have to have put the image that I'm got it all together. But later when I'm alone, then I need to admit these conflicting feelings. No, I don't know what a good day is. I don't know why the sky looks gray, but it's really blue. But when it's time, you'll wake up. But I believe that time will come sooner if you will truly lament when you need to lament. I was in Tel Aviv. I was on the top floor of our hotel and talking to the girl in charge of the little refreshments. I think we were restricted to the hotel at that time. Uh-huh. And I was going through the Hebrew alphabet, practicing, because it had been some years since I'd studied it, and I was asking her for some help. And my son, who had died a few months before, the conversation, it came up in conversation, and she said to me, are you lamenting? And I said to her, well, I'm not so sure. I went home to my wife, and I said, you know, I feel like I should go out into a field somewhere, away from any person, and scream my head off. And she said, why don't you? Well, you know, I learned that we need to do that.
Yes. Well, you have to give yourself permission. And when
yes,
things, and when we struggle with that, because the world goes on, even though we're not really living it, we're just existing in the world.
That's
we don't
right.
give ourselves permission. We don't have that catharsis, or we don't have that release. And just the physical manifestation of screaming or yelling releases so many toxins. It releases so much energy that's in us that we're continually holding on to, embracing it.
Right. You know, there's one other element of that I would say we will reach a point, or we may, where we feel resentful to others. We see people walking down the street, for example, and we say to ourselves, wait a minute, they look normal. They look like they're going through the normal life. But no, how can they do that? Life isn't normal. Nothing's normal now. Well, that can become a resentful, self-focused, destructive pity party. Mm-hmm. We have to stop and we have to say, no, that's not the right perspective. But then we have to say this. We have to say, well, I have to forgive myself for having that attitude because now I'm going to put a guilt trip on myself. So we need to just recognize there needs to be forgiveness, forgive others that may have wronged us. And which we forgave the donor who donated his HIV blood, we need to forgive ourselves.
When all this situation happened, you know, you have other healthy children. And then when Caleb was born, then all these complications came. Many people, well, because I feel so helpless, will blame God or will blame the things that they don't have control over. Was that something that you and your wife did?
I had a friend in Okinawa who fairly early on, a year or two after we left Okinawa, she sent me an email. She said, David, all your messages you're sending about your son and his status, how he's doing, they sound too strong. You sound like you're being a little plastic. I think you're angry, and I think you're angry with God, and I think you're not willing to admit it, and I think you need to admit it. When I read her message at first, I had to fight against letting myself feeling offended. That why is she saying that I'm supposed to be angry, and I'm angry with God, but I'm not admitting it? Well, you know, that message she sent me that day was one of the most liberating messages anyone sent me, because I wasn't quite of a mind to receive that at the time. But when I reflected later, I began to realize she's right. In fact, I found a book written by a gentleman who's a pastor whose son died at age 17, healthy, young, vibrant son, dove into a lake, shallow, snapped his neck. It was in a coma for a few days or maybe a week, something like that, and then died. And it took 13 years, but 13 years later, the father, the pastor, wrote this book. And the title of the book is Sit Down, God, I'm Angry. And it was a little practice he had with his children. If they were angry with their parents, they had permission to say, Daddy, Mommy, I'm angry, sit down. And there was a certain chair in the living room, a high-backed red chair. They would sit and they would talk it out. And finally, he was able to put God in that. And you know, God is big enough to take your anger. Yes. And we're afraid to admit that. So I just believe it's good and right and healthy. In fact, if we deny it, just like denying those difficult emotions, we can turn to some other avenue that's going to be self-destructive. Mm-hmm. So we need to be honest. God is big enough to take our anger and our rage and our questions. Oh, and by the way, you know, I embrace the concept of Jesus Christ in the scripture. I just read the other day that when he was on the cross, he said, why have you forsaken me? That is the question, why? So if even he asked why, then I need to give myself permission to ask why.
Yes. So when you got that letter from the pianist, what did you do with that? So you recognized that perhaps you were angry. What did you do then?
I was not initially of a mind to receive that, meaning I couldn't quite agree. I was stuck on my own prideful. I'm above that. I think something immediately resonated really in my heart that later, I don't know how much later, but a matter of months later, I came to terms with, maybe it was when the HIV infection came up, because a lot of things came to a point of reconciliation, because I actually had an altercation on the job. My 24-year career, there was one time, it was this time, where I exhibited not only some unprofessional behavior, but sort of aggressive, over-aggressive behavior with another officer. And a senior officer intervened and diffused the situation. Now, that's rather embarrassing. In fact, my boss, who was senior in rank, he invited me to take the rest of the day off and go home. That evening, he came to my home. He made a house call. It's not a normal scenario.
Of course.
And while he was there, I said these words to him. I said, boss, I said, I feel as though my son has been raped and like he's been violated. And I was so angry. The thing is, when we have those emotions, it's right to admit it. We need to admit it and deal with it in the right context, the right place and time. But ultimately, if we will, we will get through it. And I thank this lady. I can see her face right now thinking of that email I got from her and that message. And I'm thankful. When we think, oh, I shouldn't have these emotions. No, don't think that. It's not that you shouldn't have them. You do have them. You don't control them, but you control your actions.
Yeah.
You have to stop and be contemplative. In fact, I think that's where the numbness comes in. Mm-hmm. I was diagnosed as clinically depressed by a gentleman seeing a counselor, and he said, David, my diagnosis is clinically depressed. I said, no, I don't receive that. Mm-hmm. I don't accept that. I was too prideful. I was too much of a knucklehead to admit it.
Yeah.
Later, months later, I stopped and I reflected and I said, he was right. Mm-hmm. It's a chemical imbalance of the brain that caused me to not just get by with 4 hours of sleep, but I needed six.
Mm-hmm.
Great. And caused me to slow down the pace, frantic pace of life. I had to rest. I had to heal. My mind had to heal. And if I didn't stop, I suppose maybe I wouldn't be with my children to this day.
Yeah.
And it's a gift. Be thankful for the numbness, for the emotion, for the pain. And you have to wait. How much longer? I don't know. But you need to keep your mind right when your heart hurts.
Yes.
And if you do, your heart will eventually be well.
Yes. Well, I think that's the thing that many people don't realize is all emotions are healthy. It's just what do you do with your emotions?
Right.
Everything, the expression of the emotion is where the slippery slope is. Anger is healthy. Sadness is healthy. Every emotion we experience is healthy. It's just in the right time and place. And the expression, or in other words, the intensity of that expression and how it's expressed to others, in other words.
I would agree.
And I think that's where some people really struggle because they don't either, like you said for yourself, it was pride, or other people just don't want to express that. But sometimes we're told, oh, you shouldn't feel that way, or you shouldn't do this, or you shouldn't do that, when that minimizes and invalidates what we're really experiencing, because we can't sit with that emotion. And that's what we're there for. That's why we were given such powerful emotions, because when a powerful situation happens, powerful emotions need to be expressed in a healthy way.
If those that want to look at a book called the Book of Psalms and read psalm after psalm of deep lamentation and then exuberant joy and rejoicing, sometimes I get lost. Wait a minute. Who's speaking? The same author is speaking. He went from the depths of despair to the highest heights of joy, and he admitted his anger. He admitted his questions. Why? Where are you, God? He would say, we should say the same thing.
Yes.
When we feel it, it's healthy.
Well, you know, it's interesting with that, the Book of Psalms that you just said, I always think of that like a journal. It's someone's journal entry. You know, he's going through whomever the author was in one of the Psalms is going through so much, but then also then the reframe of that and finding that joy and that hope. And I think that's just a wonderful example for all of us, whether people read the Bible or not. It's just a really good reminder that when you write, if you're writing a journal or you're expressing yourself to someone else, there's nothing wrong with saying, this is where I'm at, this is what I'm feeling. But when you can look to a place of hope, doesn't mean you feel the hope right now, but if you can slightly change your perspective to say, I'm hurting so much, but one day I won't. One day I'll be on the other side of this. And when you can be aware of where you are and then figure out where you want to go, that gives you the focal point. And it may be a very murky focal point, but it gives you a focal point nonetheless to say, one day things will be different. One day I will overcome this. But you experience what you're feeling now, you accept it. And when you can accept what it feels like, then it gives you the fortitude to move on to the next level of whatever that healing may be.
You know, James, I have a statement in the book toward the back where I talk about faith, and it says, evidence of true faith is the determination to trust God when that which he allows makes no sense and is utterly disagreeable.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, our hope comes from that. Our hope comes from, I don't understand, and I'm not sure I will ever understand. Insisting on understanding may not be the way to focus. The way to focus may be, as you have just said, to recognize and realize, I'll get through this as long as I keep breathing.
Yes.
As long as I can keep my life and my sanity, I will get through this, and one day things will get better, and I don't have to understand. The answer to the raging question why may be silence. And when we're ready to take the silent answer to the raging question why, then I think we're ready to wake up. Then I think we are going to be healthy and sound of mind and body.
Yes. Well, I think that's the thing. When we continually ask the question why, and I'm not saying this is what you did, but when anybody continually asks the question why and they don't get that answer, they get stuck in that level of healing. They get stuck in that stage, if you will, and they're never really able to move on because that why question just permeates everything about themselves. And that focal shift of the next direction of their healing isn't going to be seen, isn't going to be felt, because they're so in kind of that tunnel vision of, I have to know why, I have to have this reason, or I have to have this understanding. And when it doesn't happen, that's kind of like with what you said, all that resentment, all that anger, all that bitterness encroaches in one's life. And then that's what they become. Now, David, if my listeners would like to find out more about your book or more information about you, where would they find your information online?
They can go to a website that is The Caleb Years, thecalebyears.com. And at thecalebyears.com, they can read endorsements, see pictures of the child, what have you. They can even send me a message. They can order the book from me, or if they click available at fine retailers, it takes them to a website that shows Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, Christian Books, Walmart, Take a Lot for those in South Africa. So it's right there. They Google my name, Google The Caleb Years, surely it'll come up.
Wonderful. Well, David, I want to thank you so much for your inspirational story of hope. I am sure it really resonated with a lot of my listeners. So thank you once again.
Yes, sir. It's been a pleasure, James. Thanks for having me with you today.
I also want to thank you, the listener, for joining with me today. Please subscribe to this podcast through whichever podcast portal you joined with me. If you're using iTunes and you like what you hear, please rate this podcast as well as leave your comments on the iTunes podcast page. Also, please visit my website where you may see all my YouTube episodes and published articles I've written for you. You may also enroll in the Lifeology Academy I created where you can take self-directed courses which are designed for successful people just like you. You may find all this information at jamesmillerlifeology.com. Once again, thank you so much for listening to this podcast episode today. Have a fantastic week, and I look forward to talking to you very soon.